to be a family with young children and women in a way that is impossible. So, for instance, when Marissa and I had young children, and our children are 26, we got married right in 29, 30, so a little bit older. So three years in, when Marissa was 32, 34, 36, so we had three kids. We decided we would do kindergarten, first grade as homeschooling. Fine decision. Some of you know that I'm a little bit against homeschooling, but that's not actually where I'm going on this one. So what we did is we said our family should operate this way because everybody tells us that this way is the right way to operate. She should stay home with the children. That's what you do if you're a Christian. You give somebody the full-time job of keeping the kids. And I'm sort of proud of Christians. They're stay-at-home dads now. But this is the job. That's crazy. It's absolutely ludicrous, and I'll tell you why. We had a 1,500-square-foot home with three kids under five. No adult conversation. Tons of diapers. We were exhausted. I was building an RUF at the University of Tennessee. I would come in exhausted. She would essentially hand me the kids in the bewitching hour, which is 4 to 6. No one's kids work from 4 to 6. You're just angry. So we would have a fight. We would eat some form of spaghetti, chicken, / lasagna sandwich. And then the wash ritual would start, and we would wash everybody. Then we would get them to sleep after having done some obligatory Bible reading, which involved us being angry but trying to act like it was nice to the children because you're supposed to read the Bible to your children. We'd put them to sleep, at which point we would try to do then all the activities for ourselves we wanted to do, you know, from somewhere between 7:30 and 9 until we fell asleep exhausted at 1, at which point somebody cried. We put, you know, somebody gets up, and to my wife's credit, a lot of times she thinks, well, John's going to work, I'll get up. And it created in Marissa this cycle, and in me a cycle of exhaustion, separation, aloneness, lack of sexual intimacy, lack of emotional, intellectual intimacy. And while I mean to speak this as a husband passionately in love with his wife, sort of reflecting on Proverbs 31 of all things, which really paralyzes women, began to dawn on me that really in those days when they did add the room or two rooms under the house and the husband brought the wife into the home, that in their culture, in their marketplace, there were always 30 women and 30 men involved in raising children. As much as I believe in the family, I would call you to remember that in heaven there'll be neither marriage nor giving in marriage. It is an impossible job to take 3, 4, 5 kids, stick them with a single individual male or female in a 1,500-square-foot anything, a 3,500-square-foot anything, with Barney playing over and over, if you're honest. If you're lying, you don't admit Barney's playing over and over, or whatever Thomas the Tank is today. To then put the full weight of their spiritual, intellectual, social, and academic development on a single individual who might be an artist who never thinks in a linear fashion because God made them that way and say, this is how you do family. If you look at the divorces, this is not John Stone speaking, unallowable for the tape, but if you look at the divorces and breakups we've had in RUF, it is because of the immense weight in our little cultural case put on women in homes. I don't know anyone alive who could bear that weight. Raising children is primarily a communal effort. And you must find out ways, even if you do it in your home, or if you do it in a building where you pay money, or if you just do it in a building where you pay taxes, wherever you do it, you've got to find a way to do it communally. This is the Bible model. You and your wife, certainly, and again, y'all want an age. We're, you know, conservative PCA. We want an age. Acts 29, give me an age. 6, 8, 9. Would you come on? Deep cleansing breaths. Let your children are fine. God loves them far more than you do. Therefore, He gave them neighbors and friends. You don't want to be your son's math teacher forever. I remember my math teacher, Miss Klontz. I still would like to hit her. I love my mother. So I came in one day to my home, and when the door opened, and I'm telling you this story because it was my fault. But however you want to hear this story, it's my fault. That isn't even me throwing it off. She wanted to do this. I partnered with her and do it. When I opened the door, like, click, palpable tension. I begin to hear screaming and crying is what I hear. The screaming is my wife screaming at Sarah, one of the most affable, get along with people I know. This is what she's screaming. Say the word! Say the word! And there are tears on a piece of paper from like 10 minutes of teaching reading. Now, here's what's interesting. My wife has her master's. She's one of the most intelligent women I know. She has her master's from the University of Mississippi. This is not a small school for writers, right? Like, people who've come out of Ole Miss writing, she has a master's in English. Like, reading for her is like breathing for the rest of people. Think about it, but not for Sarah. My other two children are under our bed, sucking their thumbs, holding hands. Yeah, as she said, it's funny now, but that's not her fault and Sarah's fault. It's our fault. What you think family is, it is not. You better get community involved with your children to make them normal and to teach them to love Jesus. You can pay to do it. You can do it free. You can do it in various forms. But you and your husband bearing the weight of 3, 4, 5 children will fail. It simply will. You, no gospel, no giftedness can get you there. Which leads me to the second point. If you tend to be a traditional family, and the husband works and the wife stays at home, or the wife works and the husband stays at home, but that's what you've done, great. You better give the stay-at-home person an outlet to make money. Not just an outlet. Several times in this job, I've been shocked to go into the home. So what I do for a living is I disciple, oversee, and supervise RUM campus ministers who are basically in the age range of 27 to 37. That means they're in that marriage category with small kids. The overwhelming number one advice I give is, your wife needs to get a part-time job. At which point, they cry and tell me I don't know and love Jesus Christ. And then I have to argue with them up to the point of going, well, I don't really care what you say. You're going to get a part-time job. Well, if I get a part-time job, then I'll spend all the money on the job. Get a part-time job, at which point they get a part-time job and they're happy because they're, I don't know, creative. You can't expect the sum total of your gifts to be used up at home. You need to partner in this both ways. It may be that she is a neurosurgeon and we absolutely want that income. And that he is a stay-at-home guy and loves it. But you must do things out of your home apart from your children. I'm not going to do all the exegesis. If you don't believe it's required from Scripture, ask Ricky. It is. You just got, now, 2-month-old or breastfeeding. Yeah, right. Get the other person out of them. That's just free advice. The thing I'm an expert on is walking into homes in nightmare meltdown with young children, with this imposed idea of family that isn't in Scripture, where there is no freedom, there is no rest, and there's tons of guilt. Please sleep. Please, after you breastfeed, start drinking some wine, and please relax. Please. Jesus turned water into wine because he knew everybody was having babies. There was a wedding. This was going to be a problem after the honeymoon. So I just, for free, we tried the homeschooling counseling. Let me just say this. The money you save homeschooling you're going to pay in counseling. That may be my best advice about that. Whatever you save, you're going to spend it later. So just know that. Now, a lot of questions, I'm just going to do it this way. I'm going to go through them and hit them, and some of them I may read and think, So if I skip yours, find me, and we'll do it. Well, I don't want to create a new law, but what I mean is we got to make some progress in life as human beings. And raising infants isn't making progress. Like, we changed the diaper. They vomited. We tried to talk to our mother, our codependent, but we didn't have time. Because the 2-year-old stole the cook. Like, that's not progress. Like, you went to school for 22 years, you made progress every semester, and now you had a baby. Which was supposed to be the greatest moment of your life, but was really self-destructive in some ways. Right? And so you've got to get a person outside, like, I did these 3 things. Oh. Like, I never understood why my dad shined his shoes. I got it. He shined them, he put them there, and they stayed shined. Raising the children was about changing a poopy diaper, picking up Cheerios, and changing a poopy diaper. And talking to yourself a lot, which is unhealthy. It's not going to work. So, volunteering in a community activity, but something almost like, hey, you got to keep the kids because I got to do, like, a hobby can be put off for a season. And, you know, and certainly, and if you're a stay-at-home mom, I'm great. I'm just telling you, the weight you're putting on this is killing you. It's more and more, as we get afraid of culture, bad decision, we're doing this more and more. So, good question. What are some concrete steps a husband needs to take to overcome addiction to pornography? This is a great question. It's a fantastic question. You cannot get rid of pornography unless you see it as a war. And you got to see it as a war for both of you. So this one is so hard. Couple of concrete things. If you aren't using filters on your computers and your smartphones and you're a guy, please use filters and on your smartphones and computers. And you're like, you're a good Christian. You're like, John, we need to deal with the heart. That's right. When I can't get the stuff, I can't use it. If you're not on the front lines just going, I'm going to prevent myself when I'm alone from opening that computer and getting to pornography. If you tell me there's some news sites I need to get to that my filter blocks, I would simply say, out of a little frustration, if your hand caused you to stumble, cut it off. I'll give up reading some news sites to not be able to get to pornography on the computer. And I'll say this, in one sense, my wife has to partner with this with me because she's got to have the codes to that computer. Like, when I put the filter on, I can't have the code to take the filter off. She's got to have it, and I can't know it. So my computer crashed one weekend, and I marched around just angry. Can't get to my computer. This is crazy. Watch whose fault it is. Mine, not hers. It's mine. She was out of town. And I just need to own the fact that pornography is the cultural sin of the day. Men and women are into it. It's a huge deal, and you got to have filters. Secondly, you better talk to men about this. You better have some men asking you the hard questions. I don't want to go too far into this because people say, I've tried that. Please keep trying. Essentially, my first line of defense is I can't get to it. Like, I just don't want to be able to get to it. And whether you like it or not, after 6 months of not getting to it, you don't think about it as much. It is a 1+2. It's a war, you got into it. Just as an aside, for some of you as women, when your husband looks at pornography, it feels deeply personal for a lot of reasons. And I would simply say that pornography it is always a graphically horrible sin against women. It helps the sex trade continue. I mean, its ripple effects are disastrous. But it is not always a direct assault on you as a woman in that way that you want to make it feel. Now, I'm going to get in trouble for that because you're going to want to universalize my statement. Pornography is about control. Men feel out of control in today's culture. Pornography gives them an image of control. They should never do it. It is never right. It is always sin. But until you can see it as part of a control issue in men, you misunderstand it on some level. It's the same way that I'm watching my daughters. I don't understand this. I may have said this already this weekend. My daughters turned 10. They started subtracting food from the next meal. I worked my butt off to give them a better body image than that. But now my girls eat in light of the next meal. This is how I eat. What's here, eat it all. Have a brownie. There'll be another meal, hopefully sooner rather than later. That's my philosophy of eating. If I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to eat a little bit less at every meal. I don't sort of add yogurt and subtract lettuce. Like, it's just incomprehensible to me the way that my daughters eat. They're thinking about food. So this is what I'd say to the women. The men can stop thinking about porn. They can stop doing pornography. They can stop thinking about it when you stop thinking about body image. And there's a lot of things. Like, you can't stop yourself obsessing about work, obsessing about your children. Don't worry about your children. Go. Like, these things are fundamentally a big deal. But if your husband or you aren't using filters and some of those basic stuff, you just got to. Somebody asked me, did I say it's okay to leave, to get a divorce for alcoholism? Great question. What I meant there was, when I said is, if you're in the home of an alcoholic, you might should move yourself to a new place until that person gets dry. Not you can get a divorce for that. There would be, without going into the depths of it, a session, a church, a community of believers would need to speak into that. There is a point where drugs, for instance, either steal people away and they're gone. They're not there. They're not providing. I did not mean, it's a very good question, that my husband's an alcoholic, I can get a divorce. I meant, in that case of 21 years of living with an alcoholic, there came a point where he decided to move out with his kids, with a court order and no threat of divorce, which was the crucial moment for her, actually. And that's a later decision, rather, but it wasn't a decision for divorce. It was a decision to say, you can't do this to us anymore. There's a lot of ways to do that. So I wasn't trying to make a statement that divorce should be easy. Great question. Is there a valid reason to consider divorce? You should always consider divorce in light of working with professionals in your local session. And the Bible gives a sort of a clear idea that when someone commits adultery, that's a breaking of the marriage covenant and the person is free to go. But it's not that simple, is it? Is it one act of is having sex one time with someone else is adultery? Is one time, are you free to go? Here's a better question. Let's say that you work through it and you decide to stay. There was this act. You decide to stay, and 5 years later you decide it wasn't worth it. Can you leave then? Is that a forever get out of jail card free? Because if we give all ourselves a get out of jail card free on the third baby, we're all gone. Exhaustion, like you can't process this alone. But if your partner, if your spouse is cheating on you, that's a valid reason to consider divorce. You should never do that without talking, if you're a woman, to women in leadership in your church, if you're a man, to men in leadership in your church. And the Bible is clear about that, but I would say divorce is a lot sort of tougher to do. Very good question. Feels like my spouse can forgive and move on. I'm a processor. Two things that should be said here is overarching principles. When we talk about change in marriage, we think in terms of years at the minimum measure. So if we go into our kitchen after this seminar and we repent and we get humble and we're really nice and we're not going to turn it on them, and we say, hey, could we see this change? And they go, I think you're right. It actually worked for once. Yeah, you're talking about 2 years where you see the first inkling of change. John, you're a pessimist? No. Change is a slow deal. It takes a lot of effort. And for some people, forgiveness is a process for most people. Here's what I would say to trust this good question. If I have to ask for forgiveness or I'm asked, hey, will you forgive me for this? And I say, I will. Even if I'm a processor, I can't require payment for it if I'm going to forgive it. In other words, there does become a point where my spouse is free from my own condemnation of them. And I am not allowed to vomit them. vomit that on them. I'm not allowed to bring it up. If they spent money and lied about it and hid it bought the UGG boots and didn't tell me, which is a really good decision, by the way. And they finally said, look, I lied to you. I took money out of the food and I bought UGG boots and you didn't know it. It's horrible. And the guy's like, I'll never get over this. I can't believe you buy UGG boots against me. And, there it is. And he says, and she says, no. I love you. I shouldn't have bought the UGG boots without permission. Forgive me. Please reverse it. It's not a gender discussion. And you say, you're right. I need to forgive you. There is a sense on that where it's, you got to forgive it. I think both of you then know that trust has also been broken. Trust is a real thing. You can't knock out one foundation in a den and expect it to be the same thing for, but it can be rebuilt back to the way it was, I think. You just got to be careful because processing forgiveness, and I don't know who this is, so it could be, it's a real thing. Like, I need to think about this. I need to feel it. I need it to grind out of my heart. Great. This can also mean I'm going to forgive after a certain amount of payment time. You can say, no, I'm not ready to talk about forgiveness. I hear you. Thank you. Let's talk to somebody. But guys, forgiveness is a big deal. I think it's what you enter into. I think what concerns me about this question is things like adultery, long-term porn use by a man or a woman. And it's as prevalent among women almost as it is men. Don't lie to yourself. Fantasy and that kind of stuff. Money's a big deal. Y'all are hiding money from each other. Don't lie. You've got it squirreled away in drawers, maybe into your glove compartment box. He doesn't know about it. My mom gave me $25. Don't tell anybody. Liars. We got money hidden everywhere. Don't lie to yourself. And the sooner you go to two checkbooks and just admit you got your own money, give half of it to Jesus and protect the rest of it, the happier you'll be. That's just fact. I don't care what Dave Ramsey says. This is a great question. I mean, these are really good questions. What if my spouse isn't real? What if I feel like they sort of don't take things seriously and I do? And maybe another way to say this is I tend to be a feeler. They tend to be a doer. And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. You're right. I should have done that. I'm sorry. And they seem to just sort of click back and off they go. And you're sort of left in a pile, right? You needed a guru and some candles and at least a discussion, a couple books read, and then some time. It's a fair thing. I'm not mocking that. That's the way people are really different. I don't think the differences are the problem. I think not acknowledging them is the problem. Like, people are just different. Like, they are. You got to stop expecting your spouse to be like you. Couple things about this. You're the spouse who feels deeply. You don't think they feel. You need to go talk to somebody. I really mean this. This is a great question because, yeah, there's something else there. I don't know who this is. But if you're really having a hard time getting your spouse to feel what you're feeling, and maybe they say, I want to feel it, but I can't. I don't know how to speak into that other than to say, you've got to get around somebody that can measure that for you. Is that fair? Is that right? Is that okay? And you need to go sit and go, now, when I said that what was going to work was devastating to me, and she did the homework with the kids and told me she was sorry and never mentioned it again, what do I do with that? You need somebody to read that with you. I don't know if it's the best gift I can ever get you, but you did marry your opposite even if you didn't intend to. And you'll never get over that. And your fantasy that there's not your opposite is this. If you divorce the person you have and marry someone else, you'll make them your opposite. What we do in marriage is we push people to these extremes accidentally. Like, you can't avoid this. No matter who's it with, you can't avoid it. And I say this to the person who wrote this question. I think at times, and Marissa and I both feel this, but sometimes I look at her and think, can I get her to partner in this feeling with me? And she's looking at me going, we got to get three kids out of the door. She's right. And she's wrong. And sometimes she's like, hey, my mom's ill. Enter into this with me. And I'm like, we got to get three kids out of the door. What are you talking about? This works both ways. And I think that I would really encourage honesty. I probably hadn't said enough this is the way you entitled your conference. But I think what I'm after is people just sitting there going, if this hurts you, I'm already sorry. I'm not going to try to hurt you, but here's how I feel. Not even how you make me feel. Here's how I feel. Can we create a space to talk about that? That's what you're after, creating a space to talk about those things. Good question. Shouldn't our marriages be getting better and better over time? John, you seem like a pessimist. In the miniseries from HBO Pacific, there's a classic scene, and I've never been in combat, and if you've been in combat, you're my hero. Anybody served in the armed services, you're my hero. Thank you for what you've done, really. There's a scene where they're pinned down on the beach, and everybody's in fear. And this guy who's been in combat before realizes, I got to get everybody off the beach. And all he does is go around screaming, get off the beach. And what he knows is some people are going to die. But his deal is there's no way to live here. The only hope of life is over there. I'm teaching you how to interpret me. I wake up in the morning to get people off the beach. And some people are going to die along the way. You're just going to get shot. I am not a pessimist about marriage. Our marriage is better. Our lovemaking is better, and we're meaner. We're more honest. We're safer. It's harder. It's everything. See, everything grows. It is better, but it isn't easier. And we know each other more. And we got parents that got to be taken care of. Look, guys, my daughter goes to college in 2.5 years, and with her, I'm $61,000 short. And with my second one, I'm $78,000 short. And with my last one, I'm $97,000 short. Period. That's how much money we are short to get them out of college. Promises I made to myself. Then I got to retire in this economy. And everybody in RUF's calling me saying, my marriage sucks. Will you drive to town and say something cute and help it? No, I'd like to go drink beer on the golf course and ignore you. That's what I want to do. My girls are going out in cars with other boys on these things called dates. Who invented this crap? And I know what boys do. I'm one of them. Now I know why my dad bought me a truck without a back seat. It was kind of a brilliant solution for my dad, my son, take the truck. No place to go make out. It is harder. These challenges are real. I'm frightened in some ways about the world my children are growing up in. I'm also excited about it, by the way. But your marriage will get better. I'm not sure it'll get easier. And I would also say there are times when certain couples get along better than others. I think there are some places where Marissa and I need to make a standing pinky agreement over a pina colada. No discussion ever again. Amen. Praise be to God. And off we go. There are some things that are hard to know what to get to. Those aren't huge things. So I do think you get holier. I do not think it gets easier. I'm not going to do this, but the older couples are nodding too much for me to be way off on this one right now. It's better. We understand each other. We serve each other. We're sinners. It's harder. How have children affected our marriage? Guys, so you got 12 days. Number one, you've got to work hard when children are born to make your marriage a priority. The best gift you ever give to your children is loving your spouse, not loving your children. That's real. There will always be times when your children destroy your marriage. And what I mean by that is they gobble the time and energy up. They don't really undo the whole marriage. And there are seasons. They're just there. Thirdly, you have to listen to each other better. I think that when Mary Simpson was born, we stopped having the ability to communicate. We had a fight right before we came out of here about who would pick up our middle daughter at the braces person and the dentist. And I swear we both think we're right about that. And we both remember almost the whole sentence. But it's gone forever. I think that children had just made it harder. There are more, like when we were just young and single in love and having a lot of sex, there was only three things to decide. where to spend all this money and what to do with all this time. Now that we have three eternal beings living in us, there's like 59 questions before 9 o'clock. It's just harder and it's more beautiful. I mean, children are awesome. But I'd say this, we both have to work to love each other, not our children more. I can easily get more emotional about my children than I can about Marissa sometimes. I don't think it's because I love her, but children make you feel uniquely vulnerable. And your inclination is to sort of drop the marriage. We will take this back up when they leave and care for them. That means your marriage is over. That's why all the divorce statistics are. Here's the divorce statistics. 7 years, 14 years, and when your second child leaves. That's how the big marriage years are. See, the first two are solid years. 7, 14, and when your second child leaves for college. Because then you go, who are you? I haven't talked to you in 20 years. That can be really hard. Our children have changed it in every way. Best thing about having children? Go to Disney. Rides, cotton candy, processed sugar. People dressed up in animal things that make you freak out. It's awesome. Take a tent. Stay in there in a little nice. Their camp. Oh, my gosh. It's nicer than Hilton. Do things with the children. Have fun with your children. You know what the kids in our RES remember? Start asking them this. They don't remember the way you taught them to go to school. They don't. Sorry. They were not obsessed with their education the way you were. They don't care if they're poor and happy. You want them to be rich, and you don't care if they're happy. They don't remember that. You know what your children remember? Playing with you. I saw a guy named Woody Watford. His wife was at this training thing I did earlier in Nashville at RYM. Woody told me this story about my dad. It's the best story about my dad. Woody grew up with me. And when I moved out of Orangeburg to Lugoff, he and I didn't see each other for about 18 years. And he saw me, and this is what he said. John Stone. I'm like, Woody, hey. He goes, is your dad still the funnest guy in the neighborhood? And I thought, my dad is the funnest guy in the neighborhood. This is what everybody remembers about my dad, including me. All the dads came home for work, and my dad came out and threw the football in the pickup football game every afternoon. First of all, I got no idea how he did that, because I would have had to have two bourbons and something else to get out there. So praise be to my dad. But my dad created memories for me that weren't around screaming at science and did you pass the test and are we going to achieve. My dad said, let's go down and out and score and this will be fun. He used to whistle. And he could throw it. We went to baseball games. We went in dove hunting fields and joked. Please have fun with your children. It's the only real gift you can give them. They know you love them, and they're going to listen to you. Trust me. Your children are going to be like you. Whoops! But they need. That's the problem, isn't it? Think back. Oh, that's a problem. Help. Have fun with your children. How much of dealing with each other, this is a great question, honestly is appropriate, healthy, in front of your kids? Everybody decided to pay attention in their sleepiest. Whoa, what did he say? The reason you're all disillusioned about your marriage today is because your parents lied to you about it. So number one, you can't do it all in front of your children. It goes without saying. Number two, there is an appropriate place and time to square off and tell the children to stay. And, you know, you kind of got to feel that thing, right? You got to ask. Your children must think you argue. There's nothing worse than in premarital counseling with someone going, you know, my parents never argued. What mental hospital do you visit them in? What's their OCD medication? Are they mass murderers? Okay, so like, your children have to know you're real, that you're tired, that you can get frustrated, that you don't always agree. But everybody wants to be either or. Somewhere there's a scale of normal living that children have to see. And there's certainly a time to go, children, mom and dad need you to go downstairs and watch television. Certainly. Certainly there's a time for you to say, let's have this discussion later. But especially as they grow older, it's even time to talk about, hey, here's why mom and dad argued last night. Here's why dad got angry. Here's why mama got angry. Here's what it's like. And most times, especially as your kids get to be about 11, 12, 13, if you've really given them freedom, they'll go, well, that's exactly what happened in class today, right? I get that. I maybe don't agree with what y'all said, but I get that that's part of life. Because then they need to see you say, I'm sorry that you had to hear that, and I'm sorry I said that to your mom. And even sometimes you have to say, but I think the fight was important for your mom and me. I love your mom. And so I think that there's some of that. I think what scares me from these rooms is when one partner says, my family didn't fight, we're in trouble in that marriage before it happened. And I would just say that if you don't think your parents' fault, Genesis 3 says they lied to you. I didn't. They just really suppressed something. Do I think we ought to pick up the lotion? Just a great toss, by the way. Just threw the thing. No. But they should see some of it. And they should be involved in some of it, for sure. How does parenting children add stress and struggles and ways to deal with that? You've got to do less when you have young children. Your hobbies do have to die for both of you. You can't go have a beer with the guys at the guys' hangout beer PCA men's discipleship group on Tuesday night. Women, you know that men, they know you're lying to them about the discipleship group. They know you're just drinking beer watching the football game on Tuesday night. They know it. So can we just call it what it is? We'd like to be alone with some other men and drink beer. That's the great party, okay? And then we can have the women can decide what they want to do Thursday night thing. No doubt. We don't have to call it a Bible study. But you got to do less. Your wife needs you there. 4 to 6 is a nightmare. But my gift to you is you got to get to sleep. There's a sense in which you got to give up on being perfect people with young children. And if you don't give up on it, you're just going to get mad and stressed. And yeah, that's hard. Ooh, I'm going to think about that one. Ooh, that's a good question. Understanding that everybody's fallen, what do you do with your spouse as they reach middle age and have different problems? This includes everything. Middle age crisis involves depression, erectile dysfunction, menopause, empty nest syndrome, loss of... I had a friend we dealt with forever, just worried about him. No energy. He finally got tested. He had no testosterone. They literally slapped a patch on him. He was a new man. He got treated for everything. It was revolutionary, but it took forever. And they just, it was so nice. It's one of the times when I thought, I love living in modern America. Bam. He was nice again. He never, you know, what is the spouse's role in that? It is a Christian's responsibility to love and encourage everybody towards holiness. So I'm a hypochondriac. She doesn't know why doctors exist. If a child walked in and both the femoral artery were cut, the neck was in the kids, she's like, Band-Aid and a little Neosporin and back at it. And I have a little mid-back pain and I am convinced I have cancer. I'm sure that tomorrow we'll have my first cancer rehab meeting. And the doctor's like, I think you've inflamed that. You play a lot of golf, right, John? I think that thing's just a little inflamed. And so I think that for us, encouragement to her is, why don't you try Advil for a couple of days, John, before we spend that deductible? I went to the doctor 31 times 1 year. Let's just say that. Like, he's one of my students from my ministry. And he finally went, John, we need to talk about this a little bit. I like seeing you and all, but you know... My wife doesn't go to the doctor, and I think that for me to encourage her to sometimes say, all right, you've talked about this, and so I'm going to set a deadline. Because we've talked about it. We're not having a fight. We've got to have a deadline where we don't talk about it or you take it on. But we can't drift around this. And this is a pretty big subject. This isn't, should I buy the Uggs or the fake Uggs, which is a big drifting question in my family. This is a... Am I in that stage of life? Should we do this? What do we do about this? I'm feeling this way. This didn't work. What is the spouse's role? The spouse's role is encouragement. I may get this later, but I'd also like to jump to this and say, and very specifically, is the spouse's role at times to say, hey, we're not connecting sexually. I don't think it's your fault. Can we talk about it? How to know if you have a good sex life is the most impossible question I've ever asked myself, ever. It's certainly not what you find on the internet and in pornography, right? That's not it. But let's do a small group on sexual comparison in your church, shall we? Y'all describe what you're doing. We'll describe what we're doing, and we'll see if it's healthy. Oh, my. Like, even that frightens me. Like, Newlywed, can we do that? Can we not do that? This is an important question. And I would say, in the Jesus sense, we need to put a glass of wine in your hands at times instead of the table, not sort of in the middle of the event, and say, let's talk about this in a safe way. Well, you want to talk about this and it scares me, fair. Then let's, when would you feel comfortable talking about that? Look, sometimes you've got to talk about talking about it. But I want to tell you, both spouses need to give leadership into the lives of their spouses at times to say, here's a good one. It's time to get the knee replacement, old man. My dad, when they cut his knee open 6 months ago, they took pictures of it and put it in a medical journal with the quote, don't know how he stood up. The doctor told him 15 years ago, you need knee replacement in 6 months. So this is my dad. Shit. And my mom just patiently waiting. My mom is a saint. And I'm thinking she should have said, let's get the knee replacement. Maybe. He did not literally have a knee like the doctor went. I've been doing this 31 years, never seen this. Click. They didn't take the knee out. It wasn't there. They just cleaned a few bits out. I mean, it's amazing. He's playing golf again, tennis, walking through the mall. Doesn't cuss through his breath. Surprising. And you just think, maybe my mom should have said, we're doing this. Let's fight about it. Please. But she's so sweet. My mom is so sweet. So there is a sense which you got to speak into your spouse's deal. By the way, get the knee replacement surgery if you even got a question. All my neighbors got it, and they're happy people. They're just happy. And then the other people are like, that won't help anything. This hurts so bad. It's unbelievable. Like, get the knee replacement surgery. Don't do the ankle, they said. Do the okay. In addition to that, I put these questions together. I should have written both. This person asked, what do you do as you age and you just realize our bodies are falling apart? And let me tell you something, friends, at 47. It starts at 40. The day you turn 40, it's time to retire. It's over. Nothing works. And see, all the under 40, oh, that's so cute. No, it's not. It's not cute. It's not fun. If I don't freebase fiber, I can't go to the restroom. Okay. You say, why would he say that? Like, look, the people over 40 are like, thank God somebody said that. Like, we're freebasing. Just before I was 40, you went to the bathroom. It was a minute. I don't know. Just, it happened. I go to the bathroom, and 2 hours later, I still got to go to the bathroom. And there's a look, that's funny. And then you can't have sex as much as you want to. The young couples are like, please don't go there. That's as far as I'll go. That's disappointing. It's deeply disappointing. It just doesn't work. Masculinity is involved in that. Femininity is involved in that. You get through menopause, your body does all kind of stuff. It's unbelievable. And if you don't have forgiveness and mercy and patience, in a sense that one day this will be redeemed, and I'm your partner in this, it won't work. Because there'll be nights you try to have sex, you want to have sex, and you both wanted to, and it just wouldn't work. Why? Because you're dying. You just are. I had a campus minister just had a bad season and said, no, he just couldn't have sex for 6 months. He was young. Just that stress just stopped it. What do I appreciate about that? His wife just said, that's okay. It's not okay, she said, but it's okay. I'll wait with you. It just, your bodies are going to betray you. I think that, part of this is You get older, you can say, this is why I care about heaven. I think 30-year-olds don't really think there needs to be heaven. They can make their urban lifestyle great. I think 47-year-olds start to think, that's going to be a good thing. I think when you watch your parents die in a bed hard, you'll be glad that Jesus has given them a lot of stuff afterwards. It's a real thing. It's just, life is disappointing in a lot of different ways. And there's not, again, I think, you don't really think you'll get to this, a preacher. If you're just not a doctor user, there really is a time to use doctors. Again, somebody laughed, I get it, but there are really people, and I'm not, if you feel mocked or put down by me, I really don't mean that, but you're going to just need to go to a doctor when you're 50. You just, they've got these pills and stuff that work, and that's not, I'm not talking about like for sex, like it'll make your blood pressure come down, you'll feel better. I mean, my dad is the greatest dad ever, except he doesn't believe in anything. Oh, that medicine won't work. 197 over 624. One pill later, he's happier and relaxed. Like, there is a time to use doctors and to really embrace them. And all the doctors are like, of course. But it can just be this sense of, I don't know how to go even tell a doctor my body doesn't work. Look, your body doesn't work. And this is where you better love each other and be forgiven and patient and recognize, she can't meet all my needs. She just can't. That's just part of the deal. Somebody needs to tell me what time it is because I don't remember what we said about ending time. But yet, am I fine on the schedule time? That's what I need to know. Denial versus forgiveness. Man, I think I've covered that. I'm going to hold off on that. I may come out if I got time. I'm going to do this for fun of it. As far as sex goes, are there any things off limits when you get married? No. Unless your spouse says no, and then it's absolutely off limits. Right? Go talk to people. You should find somebody to talk to yourself like, just not your small community group. This is a great question. How do I avoid projecting my parents' mistakes, personality, and past onto my spouse? My parents, caused great pain in my life. And so you can see this. If you're a woman, it's maybe your dad and now your husband. My dad caused great pain, and now I see my husband as a pain causer. My wife, my mom caused great pain. I think you have to tell your spouse, I'm doing this. I'm about to get mad at you, and I'm wrong, so help me, because what I'm seeing right now is my dad. Because when Marissa, if she says that to me, it helps me go, all right, well, then I got to get at this at a different issue. And I have been able to say to her more often, for me, it's more, my mom's a people pleaser. So she created, I'm a nightmare first child for my mother. Y'all should pray for my infirm mother. She gave birth to someone who woke up every morning wanting to embarrass her. I'm not proud of this. I used to, in the mall, say out loud, are you going to discipline me and all these people see it? She woke up to please people. It was all she thought about. And she's got me just walking around, oh, she should have hit harder. But I married a coyote from Ole Miss. And to be a cow at Ole Miss, you sort of got to care about what other people think. So that's a place where we clash. Is she wrong? No. Am I wrong? No. But I have to sometimes say to her, and I'm saying this out of my weakness. You understand, the weaker brother can confess, hey, I'm seeing my mom right now. Because my mom would make me do some beautiful things, but also some ridiculous things in the name of other people. There were some beautiful things my mom taught me. But there were some things that I don't require of my children that my mom required of me. And our marriage can get stuck when suddenly my mom's name is Amelia, when suddenly I see Amelia. Interesting enough, I married my mother. My brother married his officer, my mother. The irony is, he got along with my mom and I didn't. Very ironic. And so when I make her my mother, I lose my temper and it's my fault, not hers. But I think that I have to talk differently to her about that and say, that's scaring me. But I think especially for people who've been deeply hurt, abused, overcorrected, achievement out of the wazoo, that you have to learn to say, I know you're not doing this. I want you to hear how it feels to me. And when you say that, you can't then say it's 100% their job to fix how I feel. So here's the funny thing. My mother can only do one thing at a time. It's amazing. So we always had one thing at supper cooked and everything else wasn't quite finished or was overcooked. Because she can only do one thing at a time. When the phone rang in my house, my mother picked it up and everything else stopped. So my brother and I always unburning stuff and pulling it. But this is what it created. This is like a Pavlov dogs moment. If the phone rang at supper, my mom answered it, walked out of the room, and gave that person their full attention, and my dad lost his temper about this. Every night at dinner, he didn't hit anybody, but Dad sat here, Mom sat here, I got one brother, John, and Bob. Mom got up, answered the phone, he got angry. Flash forward, idiot male, history degree from Clemson. We get married. We're going along happy. 4 o'clock happens, the phone ring, I get outrageously angry. Her sister would just call to talk, appropriate. And I would start screaming, get off the phone. I think maybe she pointed out, she goes, I think this is your mother. And then it sort of clicked with me that dinner and the phone scared the crud out of me. She should answer the phone when her sister rings at 4:25. I should repent. So she has done a great job of becoming very sensitive to me about the phone. It's hard to get over that. It happened at Thanksgiving about 5 years ago where my mother got up and I wanted to take the phone and go, it was bull crap. Deserted me over this, Mom. My mom didn't desert me. She stayed up every night and taught me spelling, bought clothes for me. But that feeling of my dad getting angry jumped into our marriage and I had to repent. And I needed her help. I can tell you like 2 weeks ago, my phone rang and I was just because, this is great. It's 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock. That's the reason I get angry. And I got to get over that. So I'd say this, when your family's hurt you, you need protection from your spouse. I'm not denying, but you also need to own and give that person freedom not to be that person. And that's hard to figure out why you're angry about that. Whoever asked me this question, I one time gave somebody the advice in a marriage. It was great advice. When they argued, they should get naked. And somebody asked me, do you recommend husband and wife get naked during an argument? For that couple, I do, because when they got naked, they didn't yell as loud. And it was the best advice I've ever given them, and they still take that advice. So whoever knew that, ha, it was good advice. But I don't care if you get naked when you argue, but it ain't the worst advice I've given anybody. You'll get calm just getting undressed. I'll tell him. Like, it's at least a breath before you start screaming at each other. This is too simple an answer to a question. What's the first step to overcoming self-righteousness? Admitting you're self-righteous and trying to see it work out. See, if we admit this, especially if, like for me when you're Southeast, we judge everything. You know, like we walk to people and go, what kind of shoes they have on? Where did that belt come from? I wouldn't wear those jeans. Sweater is so last week. That's self-righteousness. It's saying that I'm the supreme judge of everything. 90% of what you care about is cultural and not Jesus. By the way, 99.1% out of everybody who ever lived can't read. And you're obsessed with your children's reading. I see where that did not come from. Jesus. John doesn't believe in education. That's not what I said. Just said, some of this is self-imposed. What if they don't get in a good college? You mean like half of the CEOs of the Fortune 500 companies? You mean those people? What if they just decide, I don't know, to be happy and drive around in a van? Why do you think that your friend's judgment of you about that child who is, I don't know, happy would be a bad thing? Because he didn't live up to the standards that I took from the devil and imposed on my children in the name of Jesus. Everything we do is self-righteous. This is not a bad fight, but my wife requires I wear a t-shirt because guys at Ole Miss wear a t-shirt. I'm from Lugoff. I went to Clemson. I hate t-shirts. I wear t-shirts. I'm pretty sure that's not in the Bible. I'm pretty sure we argue about it. I'm pretty sure I demand that she act a certain way in the kitchen that's not in Scripture, because I checked and there is no passage about how you act in the kitchen. There's not even a kitchen in Scripture. CrossFit people, everything you believe is self-righteous. Everything. You know, golfers are the worst. But at least we drink beer while we're doing it, right? At least there's somebody driving in the car saying, just relax, have a beer. That's better than get better. Elite fitness for middle-class dads. CrossFit. Because that's what you need to watch television and play Polly Pockets with three little girls is elite fitness. What are practical ways that male headship, female submission play out in your family? If you'll let me take away, just for this question, it's a good question, but the headship submission, I would say, the two most practical places where husbanding and parenting and wifing and submission and respect and all that play out is in the budget. If you're going to follow Jesus, you're going to get on a budget. And you're going to watch both of you discover that you're incredibly selfish and that you didn't want to sacrifice for anybody. I need to initiate a lot of things in my family because my wife's actually good at them. And I need for her to partner with me in finishing them. It's okay if she initiates it. I don't really care about that. But the way I see it is that when I see us get off course, I got to be brave enough to own it. So this is practically what that means. I think about 8 months ago, I made my wife incredibly nervous. And I made her feel anxiety. And it's my fault. Now see, y'all think when I say that, it's a reverse way of criticizing her. I think I really did this because I looked up and we had blown through $6,000 out of savings in 1 year. And there was no identifiable place that it went. And so I sat down with the budget, like the budgeters in here, they went, wait, whoa, what'd you do? $6,000? Oof, yes. Three teenagers' friends, $50 bills come out of your pocket, they catch on fire, and they burn the next $50 bill at the same time. And that's just for the iPod, much less the cord and the headset and the dance. Oh, my goodness. And so I started seeing that we were leaking money on both sides of our budget. What I mean by that is the stuff that I'm so responsible for and the stuff that she's responsible for, not in terms of income, but in some way she pays all that school stuff or what the girls need and dance. And the way I choose, there is not in the Bible, is I distribute to everybody money the first of the month. She gets some, the girls get some, I get some. So we get paid on the 25th. By the 27th, there's no money in our checking account. Everybody's got money. And we were leaking like a sieve. And so I did what any good red-blooded American husband would do, is I started blaming my wife for this problem. And I started talking about, we don't have any money. We don't have enough money. I don't know what we're going to do about money. And it doesn't help that the TV is screaming about this right now and that people are really experiencing this and they're out of work. They're taking, you know, less paying jobs. This is a big deal. So instead of leading through it, I asked everybody to be anxious about it, and my wife followed me. And what I needed to say is, I've betrayed us in this area. We're both messing up. What caught me off guard was, just so you'll know this is coming, her gas bill went from about $428 a month to right at $700 a month. And we didn't make that change because we weren't paying attention to the way our children's lives We just started leaking $400 a month in gasoline. Hello, Prius, right? So buy it now, use it later is what I'd say about that. Because you don't have the cash reserves when you got three kids. And the children were costing more than I thought. And I needed to create categories, teach them, I mean this, demonstrate patience, check it. We call this discipleship. See if we're all on the same page and work it. Instead, I stomped around and said, stop spending money, which just makes her coupon to death, which is beautiful, and save money like a wazoo, but it really isn't working a plan. She got anxious. Now, that's completely my fault. Do you see that? That's 100% husband's fault. And what I had to say to her and what I'm saying to her now is, I'm sorry, can we together, this isn't a head servant, can we take this on? Help me. And don't just simply help me by couponing, that's great, but I might need you to get a part-time job, which in our family, which is not the right thing, we had decided she wouldn't work, and that was almost like, maybe God is sovereign, we're going to let you get a part-time job. Well, that means if she's going to get a part-time job, I got to do more, practically. I got to vacuum. I hate vacuuming. I can't criticize if something gets dusty. Perfectionistic men at work who can fire people and they do what you say, not like at home. I got to enter into what I'm asking of her is very different. So how do I think headship works? I think headship and submission work when you become partners and share the responsibility and you own it. Now I can reverse that story. She's done some things that made me scared to death. You know, and then she had to say, I'm sorry. It's really, her mother got ill 2 years ago. Her mother had a stroke, disabled her mom. It's a big deal. It is a huge deal. Sort of scared me. We had to enter into that together. She needs a partner in that. And so I think headship and submission are about partnership. How am I doing on time? I did that one before. Good second question. How much sin do you confess to your spouse? I don't know. There is the spouse that can hear it, and there's the spouse that can't hear it. Here's what I would like to encourage all of you to do. You need to move towards hearing more, and you don't need to talk like John Stone. What I mean by this is, I think that as marriages mature, there should be a growing ability to appreciate the brokenness of your spouse. Not that they're getting away with stuff. I don't mean that. But that you can hear that they're struggling with things. Eating disorders, which happens if women have it in childhood, when they're younger, they're liable to have it after the birth of a child. Pornography, which he may have done long before he knew you existed, and now flares up when a child is born and y'all can't have sex because you had a C-section. Like, these things flare up, and I think there should be an increasing ability to talk about it. But I do understand that not everybody can take it. So there can't be one size fits all. You got to move into who you are. That's why I would say you got to have a counselor so that he can say, look, you and your friends work that out, John. She don't want to talk about that. Or even she can say, he doesn't need to hear this. He just doesn't. It's not even that I lose patience. John doesn't get it. My friends get it. But I hope that over time, we can share that real struggle. Even failures. I think that the dilemma is we personalize everything in marriage, and sometimes it's a bigger issue for that other person than just about me. But that takes a lot of help. It's a good question, and it's a different answer for everybody. This is the one I'm going to end with. How do I convey to my husband? I need his attention. Whoever wrote this, I'm so with you. More than he needs his electronics. Brothers, 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 and sisters who work in the community, turn your cell phones off at 6 o'clock. Or don't tell me you love your spouse. This is not the way you want your children to remember you. What if I had tried to do the seminar, like this? If you can't get to work, now look, if you're a doctor, where's my doctor brothers? I know you're on call. But you're telling me an electronic mail is the difference in your eternal existence? Really? Like, it's got to be answered? I'm on call. My people all fall apart about 10 o'clock at night. They're campus ministers. Nothing happens at 10 in the morning when I'm fresh and ready. They've been up till 2:30 teaching a Bible study. Look, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody, and so is she. Your children and your spouse need that thing to go. I got campus ministers, and their wives would talk about this at length. Finally made the discovery to leave the cell phone in the car with an agreement that at some point, and not even, they could go get it and check it, right? Because there are things happening on campus. But that idea that even when he was there, that he that was there and that wasn't there and the computer wasn't turned off was a big deal. They discovered a couple things when that happened, and you'll discover them too. You're bored with each other. That the reason this looked like he was paying attention is just a distraction. But women do this too, right? Like sometimes when Marissa and I are about to have the foot rubbing session, which again, remember, is just foot rubbing, and suddenly the carpool emails start, and I just go, could we not do the carpool emails right now? Da-da-da-da-da. Then I get mad at the tone she's using that indicate that, like some of you wives, you viscerally hate the tone of a text message on your husband's phone. It physically makes you angry, vice versa. There is a place to practice fasting with electronics daily and yearly. Last story. I turned my email off for the month of August and my phone off in a sabbatical. It was awesome. Best thing ever happened to me except for Marissa. It was really awesome. And while I, and like the business people always, you're a preacher, or you just live in your head, you don't know. That's what y'all, like I know what non-preachers think about me. I get it. I'm not an idiot. If you're in a business that requires absolutely your attention from the minute you go up to the minute you go in bed, quit and follow Jesus instead. Now, in this economy, that might take a year. I get it. But it can't be true that I'm expected to be absolutely accessible to everybody instantaneously except my wife. That is berserk crazy. There really ought to be seasons that day where those things go off out of sight. I know that some of you will sit around and discover your ADD and you need Adderall. That'd be healthy, don't you think, to discover that? We ought to, I don't know, talk. We ought to not send emails to one another about what we're talking about, but actually use words. He ought to stir the rice and you ought to stir the beans and discover boredom together. Maybe you could both stand on both sides of the dishwasher and the OCD one could watch the other person pack it wrong and let it be when they push it in. Not rearrange it into the most efficient dishwashing way ever, clearly enunciated in Second Opinions, which if we don't obey, we're going to hell. Electronics are not only a source of distraction, but also a source point for bad relationship. You can't tell me people are texting their girlfriend while they're talking to their wife. Cut it off. Move towards a job. You know what? Hey, businessmen that don't respect me, build a dang business where other people are in charge too and you're not needed all the time. That's what Jesus would do. He hired 12 people, gave them a little responsibility, trusted them. They messed it up all the time, the thing still worked. Like there ought to be a sense where that thing can go. Your children deserve to be able to get your attention, and electronics are preventing that. But especially your wife, right? Both ways. It's been great. What do you want me to say at the end? She said 5 minutes, the 5 minutes ended.